Hi everybody, welcome to Safeguarding in Focus, a podcast brought to you by CPOMS, the market-leading safeguarding software provider. I'm your host, Sam Eustace, and for today's episode, we're going to be turning safeguarding into the world of sport and the unique set of challenges that brings to safeguarding at both the elite level all the way down to grassroots clubs. And our guest to go with us on this journey in the podcast is Antonia Noble, a barrister with over 25 years of experience working across law, education, sport and child protection, co-leading safeguarding fundamentals alongside former England international footballer Paul Stewart. And together they've created the Safeguarding Quality Mark, now used by sports clubs and other children's settings across the country. She's also written and overseen safeguarding training for sport and regularly advises welfare officers and senior leaders across professional sports organisations. Quite the CV. Welcome, Antonia. Thank you for joining us.
I'm not sure it's a CV. It's just a long CV. It's just an old person talking, isn't it?
Busy list of things that I need to do in a day.
Been around a long time, honestly.
In terms of, you know, the work that you do alongside your career as a barrister, what drew you to focus so much work on sport, specifically the different things that you're looking at in settings and the work that you're doing at the moment?
I was thinking about this, and what I really am, and you're quite right, is I'm a criminal barrister at heart. That's kind of what I am and what I do. But alongside of that, I absolutely adore sport. I love sport. I have since I was a tiny baby. So like many, many people, I spent most of my childhood outside playing sport, playing football mostly with my friends. But I got to the age of about 8, and all I wanted to do was play football. It's all I wanted to do. If you ask me today, I'd probably say the same thing. What do you want to do? I want to play football. And we got to the age of about 8, and there were lots of girls in this position, and we were told, you can't play anymore. You're not allowed to play sport anymore. You're not allowed to play football. So we go off and we do all sorts of other things. I'm probably in the right place, but actually bringing the criminal barrister side of things together with the safeguarding, and people all see my social media, it's all about playing and having fun and making life a lot lighter. It kind of brings all of that together, and it's where I connect with people. I love talking to all sorts of people. So I work across education as well, as you know, but also across professional football, children's activities. I just like talking to a wide variety of people. And I think it's really important to hook in, I think, children's activities and sport, because it's where children live and where they grow and where they want to be and where they should be safe. And in years gone by, perhaps they weren't as safe as they should be. And we need to all move to create a safer environment in those environments as we find in schools today. For my part, I think that if we can harness that and get sports into the same place as education, we've got a really good chance of changing society so that kids are safe everywhere they want to be.
You touched on something there with the different sectors being mentioned. Like I'm from an education background, and I've often felt that education, particularly the education sector in the UK, is often considered world leading in terms of how it approaches safeguarding, guidance and practice, policy, procedure. I think it's fair to say that sport isn't quite far along in that journey. How much progress have you seen from your side of the fence on kind of that sector's genuine progress over the years?
I think there's been an awful lot of progress across all sectors. I really think, and a will to do things. Been so many changes, particularly following sports people speaking up, people like Paul Stewart coming out and being really brave and speaking up about what had happened to them. But I do think there's a real difference, isn't there, between the expectations inside of education, which are driven by a very clear regulatory system, which is looked at and reviewed every single year or every couple of years through Ofsted. And with sports, where there have been incredible changes and people have genuinely moved mountains. So particularly with football or rugby or cricket, we know that they have really good systems and processes in place. And there are really clear expectations from those national governing bodies that go down to the grassroots sports clubs. But there are, I think, there's a real blind spot in some of that. And I think it's around human nature. And it's one of the reasons maybe we'll get onto later as to why we started up Safeguarding Fundamentals. And it's that human nature, which is, it's not going to happen here. And we know that it is, but we need. So that's why we need that societal change to not just sit alongside the regulation of it, because that's all done. The policies, the procedures, stuff that people are doing is incredible. But we really need everybody to be involved. And I think that's kind of the blind spot that I would talk about now, is about everybody being involved in it so that it becomes an easier conversation for those DSLs who are doing it across every organisation, whether they're professional DSLs or they're voluntary. They're all doing an amazing job and a difficult job, but we all need to support them.
I would argue education still isn't there, embracing the message and keeping children safe, that it could happen here. You know, that fundamental line in keeping children safe is drilled into people year in, year out, and there's still occasions where people think that their setting or their system or where they're at isn't the place where that thing occurs. And things like County Lines blurred the lines on that and put people thinking about it. But in the online world, there's no boundaries.
Yeah, I think it's just human nature, isn't it? That we all want to keep kids safe. If you ask anybody, they will say, yes, I do want to. But when we start getting involved in the word safeguarding, that's when it becomes a bit more complicated for people, I think. And it's like, it is everybody's responsibility. But I think it's something, for me, the word responsibility has a potential not to reach everybody.
But what is that responsibility? When we say it's everybody's, what is it? Like, it's hard to define for some people, isn't it?
It genuinely is. But if you've used the word responsibility, I think some people will think, actually, I'm not responsible for it because that's their role over there. I can support them. So it's everybody's got to be involved in it. Everybody's got to do their bit. You can't drive keeping children safe like that. That's kind of the message that we need to get out to people, is everybody has a part to play.
And everybody, in the term of kind of grassroots, you know, all the way down to kind of volunteers, not just safeguarding professionals. So there's policy and the realistic things that can be achieved in the environments that we're dealing with, like in any organisation where you're basing it on volunteer effort. What's, do you see a gap between the policy and the practice in that sense?
I don't think there is. I think the DSLs in the football clubs and the welfare offices particularly, they know their policies, they know their procedures. I think, and they are support, and genuinely, I'm not just saying, they are genuinely supported incredibly well by the county FAs and the national governing bodies across cricket and rugby and all the rest of it. But what I think is not there, and it's again a society issue, is that there isn't the time and the resources, I think, inside of those clubs to do that, where they are all volunteers. And how do we make that easier for them to fulfil their responsibilities? But that's not to say we shouldn't be lost in admiration for not just the people doing the safeguarding, but for everybody involved in volunteer football clubs. They give their life to it. It's an extraordinary amount of time that they give to this club.
Anybody giving over and above like what they just do day to day to support young people to access things and achieve things that they couldn't otherwise do in a typical setting is phenomenal.
I think it is just the time and the resources that stop people, because I think it's going on, but would make it easier for the welfare officers is just to have a little bit more time, a little more of the resources of the club to bring that in, which is why we sort of did the safeguarding quality mark to make it as simple as it possibly could be, whilst retaining all the parts of, you know, of working together and all the expectations of the national governing bodies, because actually we need to make this as less time consuming on the resources of what you need to do with the policies and procedures, and actually living it. Because safeguarding is nothing if it's not sort of, it's not driven out into the whole club.
That burden of responsibility can feel exhausting when you're trying to apply that to everywhere. And I think one thing I love about safeguarding fundamentals and the mark that you've achieved here is, and that quality mark is, it allows an element of celebration of stuff that you're doing well. Like, let's what we're up to, where we're going well, and how we can make it better, not here's a list of stuff you're doing wrong.
That is massive for me. If we hook back onto that first conversation I was saying about, you know, me and my social media profile, and it's genuine, is we all need to start having a lot more fun. We all need to start celebrating each other and supporting each other, because there is so much to do and we don't. You see safeguarding leads in clubs or in schools, they are the end point of everything, and they sit there and they do their job and they do it wonderfully. They genuinely do. But they don't take time to actually celebrate what they're doing, because it's really important those kids are happy and safe. But it just gets left on the side, doesn't it? And that's a massive thing for safeguarding fundamentals, is to start shouting really loud.
And this sector offers, you know, certainly from the grassroots element in any sport, offers an opportunity to celebrate the whole child. Like, the child in the education isn't always the child that presents the same in these sporting environments. Certainly sport itself allows children to exist and, you know, enjoy settings that don't always feel like traditional environments like schools. You know, accessing, you know, you're working with all these different environments. You're going on away trips, you're going for away games, you're going to different areas, hotel stays, stuff like that, all those one-to-one sessions, stuff that goes on that you're like, whoa, I don't do this in school. It's amazing.
But they don't, and I think there's more of an in-depth relationship between DSLs in schools and the safeguarding and the child protection elements of it as well. But the breadth of safeguarding or keeping kids safe in sports clubs, grassroots, yes, but in the professional game is absolutely extraordinary. It is jaw-dropping from, you know, match days, from kids being involved in coming in into grounds by themselves, under 16s, can they be searched, are they drunk? All of those things, what happens in the hospitality suites, what happens in the changing rooms when you've got a player that's 17 and the rest of them are 18? What do you do with host families? What do you do on away trips when everybody's gone off to Portugal for the pre-season? It's a huge, huge responsible job, which, well, I am genuinely jaw-dropped. The guy to do it. I really am.
It takes a lot of thinking about, doesn't it, as a practitioner in that space. And part of me, from an ex-DSL perspective, thinks, you know, and this is just an open question to, I guess, the people who might be listening, how can we help children prepare for these circumstances so it's not all on the shoulders of the safeguarding teams in the grassroots clubs? Like, what can we do in education to help a child be prepared for the fact that they could do a hotel stay? Like, residentials are brilliant in schools for that, but it's contained and it's a little bit safer and it's a little bit steadier. Like, how do you deal with away trips, changing rooms, stuff like that? Do we protect? Do we make sure that we're educating a young person that if they're going to be going into these spaces, is there stuff we can do to support them, to help them understand how to, you know, how to deal with that type of stuff?
For me, it's the first line, isn't it? If you can allow and enable children to keep themselves safe, that's the first protocol. And then the rest of it we can support with. But unfortunately, at 3 o'clock in the morning, nobody's going to be in a bedroom with a child with a mobile phone. So for me, it is all about equipping kids with the tools to keep themselves safe.
It's a different world, isn't it? The online world removes barriers and removes physical silos where you can be contained. We've talked about it in previous episodes where, you know, even the world of bullying and unhealthy relationships can be exposed all through the 24-hour cycle of a day because you're not stepping away from it or having it contained just in a playground or anything now.
And we've got to be really clear that kids have got to learn at a stage when they're ready to do that and it's not going to frighten them. But that is always going to be the first line, isn't it? You need them to know what to do if something's going wrong. Which, I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with the sort of my body stuff, which I'm massively supportive of that and sit on their board because it's what it does. It gives kids the tools to know.
Yeah, sense of agency around safeguarding. That's incredible work. Another thing, I missed that off your CV earlier.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. And it's for everybody, isn't it? My body's my body. It's in pretty much every country in the world and translates into God knows how many languages. So, yeah, if people haven't had a look, have a look at that.
Now, thinking about changing gear and thinking, you know, we've talked about the element of grassroots safeguarding. I think there's enough, you know, kids who access grassroots have aspirations of moving beyond grassroots into semi-pro and professional game in whatever sport they're in. And, you know, there's always these pathways to success. But there's a lot of growing conversations about the toll that performance culture and those pressures can take on the athlete's well-being. Like, how do you think a different approach to how we safeguard and should be practiced in, I guess, elite and high performance sports? You got any thoughts on that?
I do. And again, it's kind of what we're all about. It's about that whole child, isn't it? So something really struck me when I was watching the Olympics and when they were coming back from France, and every single one of the athletes had a media message. And I think they were absolutely right. But the one that sticks to my mind is Tom Daley, who said, you know, if you want me to win a gold medal, I need to be happy. A happy athlete will win you gold medals. And that's, you know, that's about elite sport. But actually, it's about everybody, isn't it? It's about giving a child the best possible start and supporting every part of them and not just locking onto that elite part of it. Because as they were really clearly trying to tell everybody, it is part of it, but it's only part of the journey. So we look at somebody like a Gary Dack at Norwich City. is set up last year at Safer Sport Group, which is all about taking that well-being and that high performance and safeguarding and putting it in one place so that the whole athlete is really, really looked after. And people think it's a lot to do, and for grassroots sports clubs, it may be an awful lot to do, or for children's activity listeners, or you know, nursery providers, whoever it might be, because it relates to everybody, doesn't it? One of the people we've been talking to a lot at Safeguarding Fundamentals is a guy called Joe Thomas, who runs something called Fulfill Football Coaching. He's a semi-pro footballer now. He was a pro footballer. He set this up. Really young guy, but his experience in the game and as a human being was actually, I need this to be all about well-being. This is about football coaching done well, but it's actually about knowing every player that comes through my club. It's about every coach knowing the player and greeting them when they come onto the pitch. And what we know is, yes, it takes a bit of extra time, but the reality is he is massively oversubscribed because parents, they want that. They may not say it, but that's actually what they want, is for their kids to be safe and happy, as well as learning how to play football or whatever activity it is they do.
Accessing any sort of club, beyond thinking about my own children who access clubs, and you know, kids I've worked with over the years, access it not just to be good at that sport or that activity, but they do it because it's a sense of release, it's a mental health boost, it's a supportive thing for their, you know, mental health and well-being. And you know, taking it back to what Tom Daly said, yeah, absolutely makes complete sense. And it's weird that it has never been spoken about out loud like that before. You know, just happy people make good decisions and better outcomes. Like, it just,
it is. But it's about, I think, society grabbing on and saying, actually, this is really important. It's not just about the performance, because the performance doesn't come unless you're happy and content and feel fulfilled. And we kind of mustn't lose the idea that kids are inside of those sports and inside of those activities, whatever they may be, a science club. I'm not sure it's all the same thing. Everything is the same. It's about seeing that whole child and making sure that they're comfortable and happy and listening to them, just hearing their voice. That's what most kids want. They want to hear their voice.
Feeling part of that, feeling in relationship, listen to, independent, like they've got agency over their person, their body, their mental health in that moment.
And just people, like you're saying, there's threats coming from all over at any particular time of day. And knowing that they've got safe spaces where they can go and just relax and be themselves. And every bit of it is cherished, the good or the bad, whatever's coming out. It doesn't matter. That really matters, I think, to kids. And it should matter to all of us.
Yeah. And it's, like you say, it's not a kid-specific. It's a message that we can take on and a thing that we can apply all the way through our adult life, you know, even in positions where we are now and the things that we're doing. Like, you know, coming into anything without steadiness, stability, feeling safe in the space that you are and what you're about to do, usually some sort of disappointment in the outcome or what's going, you know, you can usually sense that something's not going quite right. And if you really kind of reflect, it's, I wasn't in the good headspace for that. I wasn't ready for that. Why is that?
It's why our colleagues and, I mean, and HR, people in HR departments are so important for spotting this. And it, as you say, it applies to everybody. Whether you're young, you're old, you're my age, it matters. It matters that at the start of this conversation, you and I had a conversation about how we were feeling, what had gone well, what had gone badly, and actually empathise with each other. That mattered.
Yeah, honestly, my background is mostly working with early years trauma and abuse, and you know, I will never stop flying the flag for the power of a relationship. You know, you can have as many sessions as you want with someone around any subject you want, and it will not work if they don't feel like there's a level of relationship and trust between you and that other person. And it's their foundation for everything that we do.
Yeah, and I mean, and mine too, slightly differently, but mine was in the prison cells, mostly in Kent and central London. But unless you were connecting with people, all sorts of different people in the instant moment, but particularly those you were talking to, you know, people who are about to appear in court at the most difficult times, you were not going to get the best for them. And whatever your feelings, that matters.
Thinking about that process, you created a safeguarding quality mark where all this kind of feeds into. You know, looking at these things, this culture within a system and within a setting. And that quality mark is for sport and, you know, other children's settings related to sport. What was missing that made you feel like that this was needed? And what do you think good safeguarding looks like within that mark that you've created?
For us, it was all about creating one single system. So we've talked about football and education and But this is, it's ballet, it's the science clubs, it's the churches, it's the scouts, it's everywhere. And parents are dropping their kids off at all sorts of different places, aren't they? And there are different, they seem to be different expectations inside of each of those, because everybody has their own policy, their own procedure, their own DSM. But actually, when you come right back to it, there is a very simple system that comes out of the working together stuff and the really good practice that we built up. And it was about creating one single simple system that actually everybody could get involved in, everybody together. It wasn't something that was designed to be almost to democratize safeguarding so that people didn't feel like it was something for somebody else. It was something that everybody could do. That was kind of the idea that sits behind it. And it's, and it really does work for education or any of those other settings.
That makes so much sense when you think about, like, one of the greatest things that ever came out in education for safeguarding was keeping children safe in education. But the title within itself is quite, it's not exactly universal. And the practice within it makes sense everywhere you go, for the most part.
I think it's built up an expectation, hasn't it, around where children are every single day. And so to expect keeping children safe to be in your local grassroots football club probably doesn't work. But the core principles that sit behind that are absolutely exactly the same. So that's kind of where we came from, was can we create something using language that everybody will get and understand and feel that they can do something without getting it wrong? I think that's what people really worry about, is that it is a hard thing and it is a dark thing, you know, child protection, the side of safeguarding. But actually, that's not the bit that everybody needs to do. That's for people like you, the DSLs, who are every day, they're doing incredibly, and it is a hard job and it takes a huge toll on people. But actually, the bit that we can all do to support them is just that little bit of, you know, giving them a bit of oxygen, giving them a little bit of information, just keeping our eyes open, talking to them. That's all this was all about, was to literally shift that power balance away from keeping children safe and actually make it real. Make it real so that parents and particularly kids and survivors were part of the solution to the little bit of safeguarding that is left to do. Because whilst we know there are incredible policies and procedures and practices and some really clever people have sorted this out for us, thank goodness, the little bit that's left is getting everybody else involved, getting everybody else on the train. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah, that power of contextualizing the safeguarding model to all those different places for that whole child.
I think it is. It's about making sure that those paedophiles or anybody seeking to abuse kids in whatever way they're doing that, they know that if they've got the safeguarding fundamentals quality mark on the door, they're likely going to go somewhere else. So we need to have that mark and everybody else aware, so that there's nowhere for people to go.
And what does that good safeguarding culture against the mark translate as then? Because we know it's a growth thing. You know, you're going to, wherever you fall on the mark, you're going to want to grow and improve and move forward.
For us, it's all about making sure, the silver one is all about making sure those systems and processes are in place and that you're empowering your kids and you're talking to the children, you're talking to parents and you're letting people know what's going on. You've got a DSL, you've got a safeguarding policy and a procedure. And then the work beyond that is around the gold mark, is all around the culture. So does it live and breathe in your organisation? How do you evidence culture inside of, and it's really hard even inside a school to evidence culture, kind of find a way of doing it, but that's, does it live and breathe in your organisation? Does everybody take a part in it? They all know what's going on.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I love it. I think it's like making it accessible for people who aren't fully entrenched and trained in the lingo of keeping children safe and everything high level is really important.
I was at a Sunderland match when they played Port Vale in the Cup. It didn't go well, but I'm kind of used to that. It's not my first rodeo at that. And I was looking at their safeguarding systems as I was walking around. And I was like, should I look at their policies and procedures? And ultimately, and I did, of course, but really what it was about was that every person inside of that club, from the people who were serving the tea and coffee to the people in the boardroom to the people who were, to the academy apprentices, they were all conscious of who you were and they were all conscious to make sure you were okay. Every door that was open for me, somebody said, are you all right? And you know that that's kind of where it's at. They're everybody looking out for everybody else in the most gentle, normal way, as we all would all do. So for me, it's all about what's in your heart, actually. That's what they...
Culture and paperwork are so different. You can have all the paperwork in the world, but the culture cannot be there.
about what happens in your heart. That's what the fundamental safeguarding is for me. It's, does it happen here? Do you care?
Look at that, leading us into the more positive end of the spectrum throughout the conversation. It's been an up and down ride. If we're looking at the positive notes, that, because, you know, one of the things that we like to do through the podcast, speaking to, you know, as we speak to guests and, you know, people take this away, is thinking about reflections. Anyone listening to this, what can they take back to their organization, wherever it may be, to reflect on? Is there a single piece of advice or reflection point that you would give to any practitioner listening to this today to take away with?
We've all seen the serious case reviews, haven't we? We know that they will tell us about sharing information. And for me, I'm going to have more than one, but this is the first and the most important. It's about record keeping. It's about sharing that information, because we've discussed all the way through this. Kids are in school, they're at the doctors, they're at the hospital, for all sorts of reasons, they go and play sport. And we all have a piece of that jigsaw. And it might be something that is something positive about a child or not. But actually, unless we keep those records really clear and really safe, and we feel able to share that information, we're always going to be on a difficult term when it comes to safeguarding kids. And we saw a video not long ago of the Information Commissioner saying, you won't get in trouble. I'm sorry if I'm paraphrasing incorrectly. Don't think I am. You won't get into trouble with me if you share information for safeguarding concerns. And that's genuinely what it's about. But in order to do that, you need to have really good records. And it needs to create like this big jigsaw, doesn't it? So that people can see all of the different pieces at any one time. So that's made kind of what it's about for me. Obviously sitting at the other end of it as a barrister, I know it's really important to have those records and keep them really timely, really clearly, really when you remember what's going on, not 3 weeks later, you know, when you're sitting around the table thinking, oh, goodness. And life gets in the way. Of course it does. I mean, we all know that, but just making a note of things as things are happening. I think that's kind of the big one. But the other one for me is genuinely around empowering kids and parents and really listening to kids. And for me, that's where we'll get a change in society. Clubs can start genuinely, and it might just be that they want to, you know, change from Coca-Cola to Pepsi. Nobody knows what kids are going to say when you do that stuff. And it's usually not very significant, is it? We all want something. But if people can start listening to kids and letting them know that they've been heard, for me, that's going to create a generation that are much happier and much easier to speak up. And then we'll get that change around. And we know that we've bumped into quite a lot of grassroots football clubs through the county FAs, like people like East Kent Youth League or Soham Town, Stroud Sharks, round about me. They're clubs that are talking to their kids and listening to them. And we know that parents want that. They want to drop their kids off somewhere that's happy and where they're safe. So for me, it's about keeping good records at that child protection end of it and really listening to kids so that we can start to change the music.
So let's head back. You know, anyone listening here, have a think. You know what? Can you easily pinpoint how you're capturing parent care and child voice day to day? And if nothing springs to mind, maybe it's a point of discussion.
It doesn't have to be hard, does it? It's just have a genuine conversation with kids, and if they want, you know
that conversation, and where's it going? What is, are you pointing in something? Are you writing it down? Where, and can you show any decisive action or something that's come out of it in the past where that's happened? So you're not just paying lip service to the kids in your care, that actually things are being done to change your systems for you.
And I was showing some kids were showing around a school not long ago, and they were talking about how the school listened to them. And I said, what made you understand that they had actually listened? Well, they did A, B, and C. They changed the lunchtime to 5 minutes earlier and gave us 10 minutes, you know, to get changed. It was a tiny, tiny little things, but the way they lit up.
Imagine being that small and that, you know, in those positions and knowing that you've changed an ecosystem as big as a school or a club with just one thing.
And often you can't do it, but just to explain to them why you can't do it.
Yeah, getting them sharing that journey of, like, you know, being committed to the community that they're in, not just for turning up to kick a ball around or whatever, you know, that they're invested in it. Because actually that's going to grow investment and long-term membership, isn't it? You know,
it truly is. We know that those clubs that I listed there are incredibly well supported by the parents and people trying to get them in, because kids are cared for. Not just, they don't just learn how to play football or play basketball. Kids are cared for, and that's what their parents want. Isn't it? They're most precious things in people's lives.
It's been an awesome episode, Antonia. I really enjoyed it. I want to thank you for coming, but I'm also going to give you an opportunity to plug where anyone listening can learn more about yourself, Safeguarding Fundamentals, and the Quality Mark.
So we've got safeguardingfundamentals.com. That's quite easy to find. And just on LinkedIn, Antonia Noble on LinkedIn is my best place. We've got Facebook posts and Instagram as well. Safeguarding Fundamentals 2024, I think it's called. Come and follow my moment of joy every day, which I think I've done for 3 years. And it works. It works. It's extraordinary.
Thank you so much for jumping on. This and all other episodes of the podcast can be picked up on wherever you listen to your podcast stuff. Thank you so much for joining us. If you need any more information, please reach out to Antonia. Look forward to hearing from everyone. Please comment, get in touch, let us know what you think, and we'll see you on the next episode.